Hello, you're very welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM, the programme for teachers, policymakers and everyone interested in teaching and learning. I'm Sean Delaney and you can download podcasts of previous programmes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. This week I want to introduce you to one of my colleagues in the Merino Institute of Education, who will talk to us about leadership in education, specifically leadership in Christian education. Dr. Dennis Robinson began his studies at the Pontifical University in Maynooth and then moved to Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He has over 20 years' experience as both a lecturer and director of academic programmes, and he has previously taught in Milltown Institute of Theology and Philosophy, several institutions in Philadelphia, and All Hallows College. He is currently the coordinator of the Master in Education Studies course in Leadership in Christian Education at the Merino Institute of Education. When I met up with Dennis Robinson, I began by asking him what comes to mind when he thinks of leadership in education.
What comes to mind immediately is somebody who has a very powerful personality, somebody who is very passionate about education and passionate about people and helping people, wanting to see people flourish and become all they can be.
When you say a powerful personality, that seems as if it would limit educational leadership to a small number of people. So what do you mean by a powerful personality?
I think in reality it does limit, because I think some people see leadership as management or as organization, but leadership is primarily about relationship. And I think the passion that one has around relationships, around duty of care, around helping people to explore, to understand and develop as they should, takes a special person. So you can have people who are bureaucrats, you have people who are good organizers, you have people who are excellent managers, but it doesn't necessarily make them that kind of passionate, powerful leader that truly inspires and motivates not only students, but faculty and staff and parents, because they have this great vision of what education can be at an individual level, but also at a social level. And that takes vision, it takes passion, it takes insight, it takes spirit, it takes heart.
Is leadership synonymous with being principal?
It can be, but not necessarily. I mean, there are many forms of leadership. At its best, it is that very passionate, well-informed, dedicated person who truly knows what they're about. You know, anyone who's a good manager can be a principal. Anyone who relates with people can be a good principal. But if you ask me who inspires me and who truly motivates me, it's those special few. One of my jobs, one of my passions about education is to try and facilitate the emergence of people like that, who are articulate, who are visionary, who are competent in all sorts of areas like how to relate, how to deal with conflict, but also having a passion for people and even a great love for people. And I think this is the truly fundamental motivating factor that sets these special leaders apart.
And are there role models for such leaders, say even outside education, in society more generally?
For me personally, one of the people who has most influenced me, and it might be a surprise, is Nelson Mandela. His journey as a human being, as a person, was phenomenal, from somebody who was angry, on the verge of terrorism, using violence to get what he wants. And you see his journey, that inward journey within himself, and how he got to know himself and saw a different way of being. And through years of meditation and contemplation, through years of seeing that maybe there's something better than anger and violence, and you have this man emerging as somebody who can hold different groups of people together, who can inspire people. His language is inspirational. His life is inspirational. I'm not saying he's perfect, and he wasn't perfect, but he inspired. He drew a global audience He inspired rugby players. He inspired a nation. He inspired people. So he would be somebody who is a tremendous role model for me.
And how did he resolve all those tensions in himself that you identified? What was it that led him on his path of growth towards leadership?
The easy answer is reflection. The opportunity to think deeply about things. And the fact that he was forced to do it, in a sense, in prison. You know, he had the opportunity. He writes in his books that he would have spent 15 or 20 minutes every day meditating and reflecting. And you can see how it transformed him. So that the ability to be reflective, the ability to be self-aware. Self-knowledge is the foundation of any good leader. And so when you have the opportunity to really understand who you are and your motivations, your values, and maybe how they can grow, especially if it is associated with wanting the good of other people. The reflective practice, for me, is now becoming an essential part of good leadership.
How does somebody go about that kind of reflective practice that you have in mind?
Reflective practice means that you're willing to look at yourself. You're willing to examine yourself. Some people would do it through the process of mindfulness. Some would do it through meditation or even contemplation. But there's a very simple reflective practice whereby you look at your life and you look at your values, you look at your experiences, and you literally reflect on them. What was good about what I did today? What was difficult? What problems did I create? And have a willingness to look at yourself with the hope of growing and transforming yourself from the inside out. So that moment of is not just introspection, but it's looking at yourself with the idea that you can change, that you can grow, that you can be a better person. And this daily activity gives you the opportunity literally to examine your life, in a sense to put it under a microscope, and to understand the motivations, the values, the ideas that drive you, that help you to be the person you are.
And in a life as busy as being a school principal or being a school leader, how do you justify making the time, or how do you even find the time, never mind justifying it, how do you find the time to do that kind of reflective practice?
This is often the response that people will make, and it is one of the challenges around being a good leader. If you value it, you will find time for it. If you see the need for it, it becomes an integral part of your life. If you understand how it can teach you, you will make time for it. And so it's okay, we have busy lives, we're busy with many things, but if you understand the power and the wonder and the beauty of reflective practice, it becomes a priority. It's like, in the morning I have to brush my teeth and eat my breakfast. I have to reflect, I have to think, I have to meditate, I have to take time out. And it's not just for myself, because I, as a leader, I would have an impact on other people. So it's not just my own personal growth and development. To the extent that I change and grow, to that same extent, I can influence people for the better.
And how long should you spend doing this every day?
At least 15 minutes, at least. Sitting quietly, calmly, using mindfulness techniques, or just examining your life and your motivations and your desires and your hopes and your dreams and your fears. Whatever helps you to develop this necessary self-knowledge, self-understanding, whatever method you use, this kind of process is an integral part of good leadership.
And apart from Nelson Mandela, are there any other figures you would give as examples of people who have shown leadership or who are currently doing it?
In my mind, there are not that many good leaders. My standard is very high. The heart of a leader is essential. The quality of the heart, the quality of relational competency, the quality of vision, the quality of interiority, the quality of inner freedom, the importance of having that marvelous vision and hope for people. Show me how many people there are like that.
But the practical reality is that at any time in Ireland, we need thousands of people who can occupy positions of principle, never mind leadership more generally, but principles, we need thousands. So we have to get them from somewhere. So maybe you need to lower the bar a bit.
I wouldn't say lower the bar a bit, but what I would say is there are degrees and intensities of leadership. There are different forms of leadership. If you ask me, you know, what makes an inspiring, truly influential leader, I will set the bar very high. But I am very conscious that there are many types of leadership. And not saying that people are bad or inferior in any way, but I often think that people don't understand the implications, the consequences of good leadership. I think that many people in leadership see themselves primarily as managers, where I would see leadership primarily being concerned about people.
And when you talk about those kind of relations among people, how does the coordination of good relations with people, how does that transform into leadership, or how does that become leadership?
Yeah. I think one of the better known and more simple ways of understanding this is the notion of servant leadership, that you're literally at the service of other people. What can I do to help you to be all you can be? Whether you're a student or a staff member or a lecturer or whoever you may, my job is to help you to be everything you can possibly be, to provide the wherewithal for you to do extra study if you need, or to do yoga, or to do meditation, or to spend extra hours studying, or to get a mentor, or whatever it takes. My concern is about you. My job is about you. My life is about you. An inspiring leader takes the duty of care very seriously. That it is primarily about caring for people, with an educational foundation, with a relational aspect, with a management dimension, with a great vision for what people can be and what the world can be.
Okay, so even with that great vision, though, tensions will arise. So, for example, you may have tension between a teacher in the school and a student in the school, or a group of students in the school. So how then do you resolve those kinds of tricky matters?
One of the difficulties, one of the constant daily difficulties of a leader is conflict resolution, because you're dealing with people, you're dealing with ordinary situations, you're dealing with mere mortals and the vulnerabilities and peccadilloes of people. So there will always be conflict. So I would start with saying that conflict is a normal part of life, an ordinary part of the life of a leader. To me, dealing with conflict, dealing with difficulties, in order to do that well, you have to be aware of your own bias or prejudice. You have to be aware of your own fears. And if you can manage them, if you can understand that, I think you're more open to be able to listen to people and to listen in such a way that you can understand the essence of what they're saying and what their perspective might be, and to be a fair and balanced reviewer of incidents or situations or people and personalities, and to help people to understand that you are basically there to help them to resolve their difficulty, to understand their difficulties, to accept them, and somehow to resolve them. So conflict will be a normal part of daily life, even. And some conflicts are very serious, and some are minor incidents that you can deal with pretty easily. But part of leadership is to have your feet firmly on the ground and to understand the limitations and reality of ordinary everyday life between pupils and teachers.
And who sustains the leader then? If the leader is there to, you know, support others and to look out for others, who's there to look out for the leader?
One of the great areas that is emerging nowadays in the care for leaders is literally to understand self-care. Being a leader, being a principal, being a teacher can be very draining emotionally, physically, psychologically. You have to deal with many issues, many different personalities, and you're forever trying to be the best you can be. So I think that an awareness of how to care for yourself, again, for me, this reflective practice will be part of that self-care. So how do you understand your emotional, psychological, physical, nutritional needs, and that they have to be cared for? The first thing you need as an inspiring leader, as a good leader, is your health. You're no good to anybody if you're a wreck, if you're a neurotic, if you can't cope. So it might sound selfish. In a busy world, how am I going to find time for myself? Is that very selfish? Not at all. In fact, it's an essential part of being a good leader, that you understand that if you don't care for yourself, you're not truly available to other people.
What writers about educational leadership do you find inspirational?
Parker Palmer has been the one who has really influenced me. Parker Palmer is a Quaker, and he comes from a very ecumenical foundation where silence and reflection would be very much part of their liturgical way of being, the way of being in a community. And they are by nature very respectful of the members of the community.
That's the Quakers.
The Quakers. And they're very respectful of one another, and they listen to one another, and they support one another. They're very much, they grow together as a community. And it's a very powerful way of being. And to be able to see that translated into the educational field, where you have this fundamental respect for people. You uphold the dignity of people, no matter who they are, no matter whether they cause problems or not, that they deserve your utmost respect, that your job is to preserve their dignity regardless, and to listen. He has many fine stories about inspirational teachers, ordinary people who have loved their students, who have gone the extra mile, who have been a tremendous support when perhaps no one else was supporting them. And you can see in education nowadays, those people who do become teachers are more than likely inspired by somebody, whether the person inspired them just being the person they are, or the teacher opened a topic or a subject to them and made it fascinating and interesting, so that person wants to do this and be this for the rest of their life.
You have a particular interest in leadership in Christian education. How is that different to leadership in education more generally?
There are great leaders in education. They may be from different denominations or no denominations. They're good people. What attracts me about faith-based education is, from a Christian perspective, what I see as absolutely attractive and marvelous and fascinating is that being in a relationship with God helps you to become something you couldn't be without that relationship. The depth of compassion, the wisdom that this relationship gives, the patience and the hope and the faith it has, the faith it generates in other people and in life. So out of that relationship, as in any relationship, you know, relationships, they can influence us for good or for bad. For me, if you're truly Christian, the relationship with God through Jesus can be a very transformative relationship, in the sense that it can give you a really extraordinary, in-depth sense of who you are, and the wonder and the beauty of your being, and the graciousness of your presence, and the dignity of your way of life. Because you're loved, because you're cared for, because you're forgiven, because you're given life, it does transform you. So faith-based education is not only me being myself, but being in relationship with God. I have been extraordinarily influenced by that relationship. It has changed me. It has made me a better person. It has changed the quality of my life. It's changed my way of thinking about education, about people, about difficulties, about what life is all about.
And even though a lot of schools in Ireland are Christian in name, at least, still there is something out of tune between what you're talking about, the ideals, if you like, of Christian education and Christian leadership, and what happens on the ground, where there can be a lot of criticism even of Christian schools and of Catholic schools. How does the leader respond to that mismatch between the idealism that you're talking about and the reality on the ground of the work of teaching or the work of leading schools?
The reality is that people can call themselves Christian, or they can be principals or teachers in a Catholic school. But again, there are varieties of being Christian. There are varieties of relationship with God. There are some schools you go into and you obviously know that they are motivated, that their ethos reflects a truly Christian spirituality, the way you are welcomed, the way people are treated, the atmosphere of the school. You can go into another place, next door, down the road, and they can be Christian also, and it can be cold and empty, and can be very functional. They are educating people, but it seems as though they haven't got that same understanding of Christian ethos. So I think there's a variety of understandings, there's a variety of practice when it comes to expressing the Christian ethos. That's a reality. And again, I think it primarily reflects the leader of the school. If the leader of the school is truly convinced about the value of being a Christian, not just in a nominal sense, but if it is part of his or her life, that will be reflected in the school.
And how would you recognize that in the relationship, say, for example, between the principal and their colleagues, if they were coming at it from a Christian perspective? Or how would you recognize it in the relationship between the principal and the students?
The easiest way to say it is the quality of their presence. The way they are as people, the way they hold themselves, the way they interact, the way they relate, the different qualities and characteristics they have around temperament, around openness, around willingness to listen, around total respect for the person, around seeing the school not just as a school, but as a community. Part of their job is to help people to understand that they belong, that they're welcome, that we will provide education insofar as it's accessible to them. We will do everything we can to help them to be truly educated.
And yet the principal still has to deal with misbehavior in the yard, has to deal with drawing up policies on various matters and things like that. How will it be apparent in those kinds of interactions or those kinds of duties?
And you have to go to our friend Jesus. His life was not an easy life. He was misunderstood. He suffered unfairly. It was very unjust. And yet he maintained a quality of presence, a quality of love, a quality of understanding of people. You know, he was strong enough, he was powerful enough to see beyond the difficulty and see the people behind it. And he had that inner strength, that inner conviction, that inner faith, if you like, that he wasn't preoccupied with his own feelings or his own needs, that he was strong enough and powerful enough in himself that he could make himself truly available to other people. Again, it's not just about me, it's primarily about you. How can I help you to be all that you're meant to be? It's not me, I'm a servant. How can I help you?
It's not easy, though.
Again, was Jesus' life easy? Where did he end up? But that wasn't the end of the story. It's not just about conflict. You have to expect conflict. You have to expect difficulty. You have to expect problems. That's life. It's how you deal with them that makes the difference. As a person, as a Christian, Christianity is meant to inform our way of being. It's not meant to take away our problems or take away our suffering. It gives us an idea of how to understand it and how to relate to it, and even how to grow and how to love in these sometimes very difficult situations. So it's not a disregard of suffering or difficulty or problems, but it's a way of being able to embrace them.
You're coordinating a course, a master's course on leadership in Christian education. What is that course about?
Again, for me, leadership is an extraordinarily important function in life. And the MA we have in Christian Leadership in Education is about helping people who want to be leaders, who have that right type of ambition to influence people, to help the world to be a better place, that we invite these people to come and to think about their faith, to think about Christian anthropology, what it means to be a Christian, how to grow as a Christian, not just in terms of human success, but because we have this ability to relate to something that is truly transcendent, it can help us to grow in ways that would normally not be available to us. You can be a good person, but when you find yourself loved by God, when you find that there is a profound opportunity for a deep, satisfying, loving, tender life with God, you know, that does change you. It changes your way of thinking. It changes your vision.
And who is the course for? Who should consider doing it?
The course is for people who are already in positions of authority, whether they're principals or deputy principals, at primary level or second level, or even at third level. We've had some third level students. Or anybody in leadership. Leadership comes in many forms. It can be very informal and it can be formal. So anyone who's interested in leadership would be welcome to do this course, because it is our way of helping people in their leadership to give them the skills, to help them to understand things like ethos, emotional and relational competencies, to understand the different types and forms of leadership, and to help them to be reflective people, to help them to understand how influential they can be.
What is school for, or what are schools for?
Schools are for fun. Life is a great adventure, and there are many aspects to life. I think for me, school exposes you to many different adventures, whether it is language or mathematics, whether it is religion, or whether it is history or geography. I mean, it's a way of seeing life, a way of engaging with life. The primary function of education for me is to provide me with all of these different lenses on life, to give me the language and the understanding of these different perspectives on life, primarily to help me to be all that I can be.
And that was my colleague, Dr. Dennis Robinson from the Marino Institute of Education, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. To download over 300 Inside Education podcasts, go to seandelaney.com. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from all good online bookshops and libraries. That's it for this season of Inside Education, but I'll be back at the start of October with a brand new season. For now, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.